What if we made it clear to the Sunday morning visitor that Jesus is actually present, forgiving sins? I've written the second part of my essay, Lord's Day, Lord's House, Lord's Supper, and you can read it in the latest Issues Etc. journal. Just click the red subscription button in the right-hand column at issuesetc.org. The Wittenberg Trail feature details Pastor Eric Rapp's journey from the New Age through Methodist Pietism to Confessional Lutheranism, the free online Issues Etc. journal.
There have been times where my faith's been questioned by people who don't know me, or they've said I adhere to a different religion.
A pew is really a tough mission field. It's hard for the shepherds to bring home the sheep if they think they're already in the fold.
The pastor, Chuck Smith, was broadcast on television. Well, after a few Sundays, I decided, you know what? If I'm going to be in the overflow room, I might as well just stay home and watch him on TV.
If I were given free rein, Sunday morning would be all about Larry Peters. Thank God that there is a liturgy there to restrain that star that is seeking the limelight and the spotlight.
Lutherans living below the Mason-Dixon line love Issues Etc.
No doubt about it, what I love about the South. What I love about the South. If you need a Dixon,
might just be good marketing. You know what I mean? There's a niche any place in any society. And if you're going to start up a business, where do you go? You go where the startups are all starting up, right? Now, Silicon Valley has a long history of being a place where people will, they'll make the pilgrimage, they'll make the trek out there because that's where fortunes are made. It used to be the gold rush and then it was the fur trading industry back in the days of Lewis and Clark. Then, of course, we get to a modern time when if you want to make your fortune, start up something new, see how it works, maybe make $1 million or attract a huge audience, you go out there to the Gold Coast. Well, the same is true for a lot of churches, and they're looking precisely at, say, that Silicon Valley, the Bay City area, and they say, you know what? Maybe we can go there and do what the startups are doing. And they're doing it a very particular way. They look the streets and they see lots of beards and plaid shirts and a Starbucks on all four corners of every four-way stop. And they say, that's what our churches should be like too. Hipster churches. And it's been written about recently, hipster churches in Silicon Valley in The Guardian. Pastor Jonathan Fisk is going to join us here for the next half hour to talk about that phenomenon, some of the unspoken assumptions behind, well, is it marketing or is it evangelism or is it church planting? It's hard to tell exactly what it is. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live from the studios of Lutheran Public Radio in Collinsville, Illinois. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our conversation with Pastor Jonathan Fisk, Lars Walker will join us. He's author of a series of historic novels based on a Viking lord. His latest is called Troll Valley. We're going to talk to him about the very strange news coming out of Iceland. They are building temples to the old Norse gods. They haven't built any of these in 1,000 years, but they're building new ones. There'll be venues not only for, contemplation of the old Norse culture, but also weddings, funerals, whatever you want there. The old paganism is all new again in Iceland. We'll talk about that in the last half hour of the program. You can join us for the next hour with questions or comments. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-6943. Send us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org. A tweet at issuesetc. Our beloved on-demand listeners, feel free to use the Issues Etc. comment line any time of day or night, whenever you listen. 618-223-8382, 618-223-8382. Joining us to talk about hipster churches in Silicon Valley, the subject of a recent Guardian story, Pastor Jonathan Fisk. He's associate pastor of Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting, and author of the book Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often as Possible. Jonathan, welcome back.
Hey, good to be on, Todd.
Some people might just see this as smart marketing, but what are some of the unspoken assumptions of the hipster churches that are described in the Guardian story?
Yeah, and you know, I'm getting my answer to that and to other questions largely from the article itself. So I don't want to say that I can speak for every single church in Silicon Valley and what's going on in there. But what was very clear throughout that article is that there is a very clear assumption being made about what the church is and how the church lives, and the approach being taken by these who now maybe dub themselves, or being dubbed by the boomers at least, as hipster churches. And it's not something really very new or different. And really is can harken back to sort of the material principle of what it means to be a Baptist. And this is that the church as we see it on earth is a matter of man or of men and of men's wills and men's works. And so if you want Christianity to succeed or thrive or be, and you want church to succeed or thrive or be, it comes down to making men give their will to it, and you can do this by any means in one sense. And so in this sense, it's also very much the classic revivalist move of Charles Finney, is that we have to find the right measures to convince a man to give his will to Jesus and thus the church, or to the church and thus to Jesus, and it's just a matter of what those measures might be. And some of them may be new and some of them may be old, but it kind of to paraphrase Finney, but in my experience, it is catchy phrases and catchy music. And it seems to be kind of the same spin happening in these articles here. They are recognizing that if you want people to gather on Sunday morning for community, you got to make it kind of a fun community and give them something to enjoy that their flesh or their wills can attach to. And I'm sure we'll talk more about this, but it pervades the entire article. The assumption is church is what we do. And so if we're going to do it, we have to do it right for who we are. And if we're going to reach those people, we have to do it right for who they are. But still, behind all of that, it's about us, our decisions, our wills, our works. And frankly, that's the biggest problem, is that church isn't about us. It is what God is doing as he speaks. That's a very, very different thing. I'd also like to talk about, though, there's this other kind of interesting fact. They've put their finger on something that I think as Lutherans we could really agree on, and that is the distinction perhaps between the church, the una sancta, the Catholic calling of Christians through the Word of God, and the local congregation as organization. And this might be a place where LCMS Lutherans, we don't think about this maybe as often as we should, but there is a point at which our local congregation sort of just is a matter of what we've decided to do. The question is what are we doing? Is it in line with what God has said to do, or is it our own thing? But like they're boasting throughout this article about these startups who are so successful because they're surviving in Silicon Valley, and then it says, well, really, the reason they're here is because their church body's spending a lot of money to put them there and make sure they stay there. Okay, fine, and we can have a church in Silicon Valley too. We just have to all decide to support it and send a pastor there and let him preach. And in that sense, they're on to something. I know I'd like to see us do a little more of that.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the assumptions. What's a hipster?
I mean,
that's a term chosen by the Guardian title, Hipster Churches in Silicon Valley. I know what it evokes in my mind, generally. I mean, what I see when I see hipster is, it's just largely superficial, Jonathan. I mean, it's a guy wearing a plaid shirt. He's got a big burly beard. He rides a kooky old-fashioned motorcycle, and he's kind of standing on the street corner, maybe strumming a ukulele with a cup of coffee in his hand. That's the picture I have of the hipster. What's behind
right.
the hipster culture? What is it?
Well, I mean, you described him this week, right? I mean, and that's kind of the point. Like, you can't describe the hipster. The hipster is the guy who's going to do whatever the latest, coolest thing to do is. And he's caught in the catch-22 of it's really cool when no one's doing it yet, but as soon as everyone's doing it, it's not so cool anymore. And so you got to move on to the next cool thing. I mean, if you've never seen Frontline's Merchants of Cool, it says, golly, got to be 20 years old now, about the marketing of coolness and how it is constantly changing, because as soon as you label it, it's ceases to be cool, is really worth your time if you're trying to study culture. But so that's who the hipster is. He's always looking for the new thing. He wants his ears tickled by the most recent fascinating piece of whatever. And so he wants to stand out. And right now, the way to stand out is to have, we're actually moving away from this now, but, you know, strong, thick glasses and again, the beard, which is, you know, this has all been like the last 6 months, I swear, that the beard has been in. But it may be a little more than that. It might have been 9 months. But my guess is a year from now, it won't be quite where it is. I hadn't seen the plaid yet, so that's news to me. But I'm sure it's bigger with people who are cooler than I am. But it's all about chasing the fads of the moment. And those fads move really quick in a market driven by internet high-speed technology. But where you find 20 to 30-year-olds living in their single life, you know, it's sort of like the mating season for the bird, right, where they have to put on their pretty feathers to try to attract. And you have people living for a decade or more constantly trying to be attractive to the opposite sex, whether it's for marriage or whether it's for the hookup culture. And so they're just putting on all the feathers they can find, and as soon as everyone else has those same feathers on, they got to put on different ones. And then you have the church in the middle of this trying to attract those same people to itself. And another one of the kind of questions is why? I guess an unspoken assumption in the article is the gospel. I didn't read anything about why these people want a church or want to be church where they are, aside from this bizarre preaching at the end. This pastor is the only real quote they give of someone preaching. You rule over Silicon Valley. It's not in Google's hands or Facebook's hands or Yahoo's hands. The kingdom is in your hands. What is that? I mean, that's not the gospel. It sounds like, will the power Nietzschean, I'm going to positive think myself into somehow not living in the world I live in spite of the fact that I still live in it. And frankly, it is in Google's hands. They are in charge. I'm not. If I'm an employee at Google, I have even less power. So why are we gathering them into church? That would be my question. What's the goal? Is it to save them? And then when later it also mentions offhandedly, oh, and by the way, the thing they don't do in these churches is preach too much of that hard doctrine because it kind of gets in the way. Well, that should tell you something, too. That doesn't mean they're not preaching the cross of Jesus, but there is no harder doctrine. If you can't handle homosexuality and what the Bible says about homosexuality, how are you going to handle the scandal of the cross? The fact that none of us are justified in God's sight by who we are. So that, you know, all of this is going on in it's just not just San Francisco, it's American Christianity. But the move to like, well, now we're hipster church, I mean, this is like we were the emergent church 5 years ago. So now in what's going to be next, 2 years from now, now we're going to have the, what's going to come back? I don't even know. The groovy church? I mean, it's all on recycle, too.
Pastor Jonathan Fiske is our guest. We're talking about hipster churches in Silicon Valley based upon a Guardian story about the, it's called evangelicalism's unlikely new home. I don't think anybody inside who watches American evangelicalism would have failed to predict this. This was as predictable as anything else. At what point, and this is a question for Pastor Fiske on the other side of the break, at what point does the church start looking a little pathetic when, in order to attract new folks, it just apes the culture? It just tries its hardest, like the hipster standing on the street corner, to figure out what the next new thing is so that he can do it. Pastor Jonathan Fiske is our guest, associate pastor of Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois, host of the video blog called Worldview Everlasting. You'll find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. How does confessional Lutheran theology measure up against popular yet false worldviews, ideas, and religions? Find out at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, Friday, February 6th and Saturday, February 7th at Faith Lutheran Church in San Antonio, Texas. Meet and hear regular guests Chris Rosebro, Dr. Joel Heck, and others at the San Antonio Biblical Worldview Conference, February 6th and 7th in San Antonio. flc-sa.org, flc-sa.org.
This is Pastor Donald Jordan welcoming you to Redeemer Evangelical Lutheran Church in Chico, California. We stand upon the inspired, inerrant Word of God and preach Jesus Christ and Him crucified. Students at Chico State and Butte College are welcome to our college group. Our divine service is at 10 and Sunday school at 9. We are located at 750 Moss Avenue, and our website is RedeemerChico.org.
The cross is always relevant. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We have a special offer for Issues Etc. Reformation Club members. If you join or upgrade your membership in our monthly or annual giving program during January or February, we'll add the new Concordia Psalter to the list of current membership benefits. T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. You can find out the benefits of being an Issues Etc. confessor, apologist, reformer, or patron at issuesetc.org. Look for the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses. Or contact Craig, 618-223-8385. Or Craig at issuesetc.org. Join or upgrade your membership in the Issues Etc. Reformation Club in January or February, and we'll send you the new Concordia Psalter along with your other premiums. The Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Jonathan Fisk of Worldview Everlasting is our guest. We're talking about hipster churches in Silicon Valley, what The Guardian calls evangelicalism's unlikely new home. I'm always surprised, Jonathan, how this, you can't blame The Guardian. They don't pay that close attention to what's going on. The press generally doesn't pay that close attention to what's going on in American evangelicalism. But I could have called this one, as you said at the beginning of our conversation, a decade ago. That whatever was the new hippest thing to do, evangelicalism would be trying to imitate it whenever it became hip. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, exactly. And at least in terms of its external style, as it were. But then it's also important to see how this hasn't even changed from what the revivalist churches have always done, other than maybe gradually letting go of what it claims to believe. Finney, for all that he was a heretic, really, in many ways, still believed Jesus on the cross was kind of important to humanity. And that's the one thing that it's just less and less in the evangelical preaching that we see. That same quote I gave from the pastor, preaching the kingdom's in your hands, the only other quote they give, he says, he reminds them at the end of the service, believe in the tithe, right? Believe in the tithe? I mean, really? There's nothing else to give there? So, they keep changing the external veneer, and then as they do this, it just seems to slide further and further out of the sight of the cross and into what? And if the Bible is any proof, the Old Testament particularly, it's into paganism. It's into belief in nature as God or as God's way of interacting with us. Into ourselves as gods, and this kind of dovetails into, you mentioned that later they're going to be talking about Iceland and the resurgence in Nordic paganism. I don't think these things are entirely separate. That the more the church exists supposedly just because we gathered together and felt spiritual about something, the more we will be those pagans, whether or not we call it paganism or not, whether we get in touch with our ancient side or not. But that's just it. The ancient, I mean, that's kind of the trend, isn't it? And so I don't see that being so far off from what the next trend will be. Why not worship Thor right along with this Jesus guy? I mean, they taught the same thing anyway, right? And who's going to argue when you start saying that? Because nobody knows.
At what point does the church that kind of markets itself in this way begin to appear somewhat pathetic? Like, they're kind of out of ideas. They're just derivative, borrowing everything from pop culture.
Right. And we've talked about this before too, from fascism, really, right? Like preaching community for its own sake, and so preaching, follow me, I'm the leader because I'll give you community. It depends on what your barometer of pathetic is. If your barometer of pathetic is that we can set up within 5 years a self-sustaining community center that convinces everybody it's worth joining, and so they give their money so we can pay some people and put on a light show, if that's not pathetic to you and that's great, then they don't look pathetic. But if what you're judging this by is the standard of the pillar and foundation of the truth, which is Jesus Christ, Holy Church, the preaching of the prophets and the apostles. This stuff is just beyond pathetic. It is embarrassing, and it's worth weeping over. The desolation of Joseph, as the prophets, I think, would have called it, that we are so hungry for the world to somehow be part of the church that we don't care whether or not we are the church. And we're willing to abandon being the church in order to have people come to our meeting place and stay there and tithe. This is the death of Christendom in its worst way. And at the same sense, I think that anybody who's actually hungry for religion in the best sense of the word, for truth, is going to see this stuff and see it for the charade that it is and go find something a little more real. And, you know, when Islam's got a mosque next door to this place, and they got beards there too, only their ancient is real ancient, at least comparatively to the flannel and whatnot, I think the next step when you get tired of coffee and want something deeper is you walk out the door and you look at that mosque and you go give it a shot. And I'm just wondering why Christian churches aren't filling that void in these cities, putting up the ancient liturgy in all of its glory, with the preaching of Christ in all of His glory, and being there no matter what. And we've done the opposite, at least as LCMS Lutherans. We've abandoned these cities entirely, and so someone goes looking, they're not going to be able to find us.
No, see, that's, and I think you would agree here, that there are two positive aspects to this that I see, and that is, these are people who are saying, we're not going to abandon this city. Look at San. They don't look at San Francisco and say, look at it. It's San Francisco. Why try? They
right.
go and they try, and I got to commend them for that.
Right.
But number two, as you say, they are willing to make, to put it in kind of the crassest terms, they're willing to make the financial commitment to being there. Why is that such a good thing?
Because ultimately there is this left-hand kingdom side to congregation and church. And it's not about, like, we have to magically have God, we send a preacher and he gets wet and he spawns a bunch of believers who just happen to be there magically or we better abandon this. Church exists wherever that word is preached and you have two or three gathered around it. Our problem is we, at least as I see it, I shouldn't, broad brush too much, but in the LCMS, the way I see it is we've wanted to make every single congregation a self-sustaining nonprofit organization. And this is just silly. We will abandon the mission field if we do that. And this idea that that we can send a pastor in anywhere and have him just turn it around and have a bunch of people show up within a couple of years is silly too, especially if we really believe these places are as bad as you say they are, right? If San Francisco is Sodom and Gomorrah, and we want a church there so that people can find it, we shouldn't expect the people from Sodom and Gomorrah to pay for it. Right, we have to be able to make that commitment as Christians where we are, being fed where we are. We should make that commitment to our own congregation in the first place, but then also to be able to send these missionaries and say, you stay. You don't come back. We're not going to let you come back. You stay there till they kill you or until you make converts. But the sort of entrepreneurial franchise-driven missionary work that we've been doing recently, it just can't do that. And so when you see this, the Southern Baptist Convention saying, we decided to do this and to make this financially happen, I think that's a model that is realistic about the human side of organization that comes with church. It isn't really the church. The church is a guy preaching and delivering the Lord's Supper. But you have this building with the lights that need to be paid for. You got to have him live somewhere. You probably want to put the chalice and the paten in a safe, right, so people don't steal it. Well, all of those things are human works that we do have to deal with. And in the LCMS, my experience has been where we kind of get mystical about it, as if somehow, we don't have to deal with those things. God's going to magically provide all that. While I, refinish my bathroom and take three trips a year to Europe for vacation. But then we look around and we go, where's the church going? What happened? Well, your heart is where your treasure is, right? And it's that call to mission, if we don't recapture that, I mean, I think our cities are largely gone already anyway in terms of finding a place to go to church, but they're going to be gone even more And if anything from this, we should be frustrated by the lack of Christ being preached in these churches, and then we should be spurred not just to condemn them, but to go and do it, to go and make Christ preached in these places.
So you've essentially said the larger church needs to understand especially the inner city, as a mission field that we should be funding like we were sending a missionary to another land. He's not going to be able to grow all his own food, all that kind of stuff.
Right.
We need to financially back them.
Right.
And we need to make a long-term commitment to financially back them.
Right.
But at the same time, we don't want to confuse, as some of these hipster churches in Silicon Valley do, we don't want to confuse the church itself with a business startup.
Right. Or say maybe even with the chapel or the sanctuary that we're putting there. One of the hardest things about church and ecclesiology, churchology, is the word is just far too fluid. We use it to mean a million different things. And so, you can put a church anywhere. If by that you mean a building people gather in. You can do that anywhere. All it takes is a commitment of money. You can't put Christianity anywhere. The Spirit blows where He pleases. You can send a preacher, and He can preach. And people will hear and believe, or they'll hear and reject. But just because you've gone and successfully created this community center, it doesn't mean you've made Christians. And quite the opposite, perhaps. Jesus is the one who told the Pharisees, you travel over land and sea to make one disciple, and when you do, you make him twice the son of hell as yourself. And he was talking to the most faithful people of his day. These were the Bible readers, right? I don't want to condemn blatantly or blanketly, everybody in Silicon Valley who goes to any church there. Right? That's not what I'm saying. But I do want to give a little condemnation to we quiet Lutherans sitting on our haunches and saying, "Well, I'm kind of happy with my suburban church, and I'm not going to worry about anything beyond its walls." That is a greed that is not about the gospel or from the gospel. That is about getting way too satisfied with our flesh. We live in dark and evil days. We are being threatened on every side, both within and without, and the gospel is our only hope. And if we want to live with that, then we've got to confess it, and that means confess it to each other in church, hear it preached in church, and then sending it. And why would we not? Why would we want to do anything else? Isn't this true? Didn't he rise from the dead? Isn't he coming again? Isn't this world all just fit to be burned? And what are we doing? Right? And, I say that, it's not like I'm not going to go home and watch a basketball game tonight or something. I mean, I'm as much a child of this age and this culture as anyone. But then you see this and you see the success. Like, look, all we have to do is, pay to have the building there, and we could actually have a church there. Can we maybe, try to do that? I think it's a good idea.
At the same time, a caveat, if you would, on the expectation of success. And what I mean by that, Jonathan, is we're gonna go into Silicon Valley, we're gonna go down to Haight-Ashbury, we're gonna rent out a $3,000 closet,
right.
'Cause that's all you can get down there for that kind of money.
Right.
We're gonna start a coffee house / church, but we expect that within 5 years it will be moving out to the suburbs to a big box
right.
location. Otherwise, it's a failure. And I think not in those crass of terms, but very often that's how the church writ large does its mission work. And that is, if it isn't turning a profit, so to speak, within 5 years and able to move out of that community to where the real people are,
right,
then it's
right.
not a success.
Right. No, that's exactly right. In my mind, if you send a missionary to San Francisco and you give enough money for that $3,000, 10x10 cubicle, and you put a cross and an altar in there, and in 10 years, you have five people in there worshiping who otherwise would have no place to hear about Jesus. It's worth it if this is mission work, right? If we're really going to consider it that. If we want to do mission work at all and say that we are a quote-unquote missional church, we have to be able to do the mission that doesn't appear to succeed as much as the mission that maybe does. I remember hearing a story about a guy sent to Africa, and I don't know, this could be apocryphal, it could be made up, but it kind of makes the point really well, that he had spent his entire life there in working with the people group he was sent to. This would have been 70, 80 years ago, and didn't see a single convert. And his children died with him there as well. They all died. The church body sent another missionary afterwards, and that missionary came in, and everybody converted almost immediately, and he was dumbfounded. And he kind of asked, you know, what's going on? And they responded, well, we wanted to see if he really believed it. You know, we knew if he came and we didn't believe it and he left, he really didn't believe it. And now he's convinced us by his death. And, you know, you can draw the wrong conclusions from that story, too, but there's something there about the real commitment to what real mission is. It doesn't pull back just because we haven't made enough converts to stamp it with approval for the committee to run out into a publication and say, look at all the good we've done. Real mission work is feeding sinners. And there's sinners everywhere. There's plenty of them in San Francisco. And I know we got LCMS churches in San Francisco, and God willing, they're doing the right thing where they are. But I've been in enough communities where there isn't a church, and I get enough emails from people across the country saying, we've become Lutheran. Where do we go? We can't find a church anywhere. To know that we're not done. We're not done sending. We need to keep doing this.
I'm thinking finally here about this long account in Acts chapter 19 and 20 where and this eventually becomes one of the centers of Christianity, but it doesn't begin that way. Ephesus, there's Paul and Apollos and various other Christian evangelists who are working on this great and wicked city, a city so chock full of idols and idol worshipers that there are riots in the street
right. When
the Christians begin to speak out against the idolatry there. And how had they just said, you know, how's it doing after 5 years? They would have pulled up stakes and left Ephesus for good.
Right.
That what you were talking about just a moment ago, that kind of very short-sighted view of how you both plant and sustain a Christian congregation. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I mean, you could make that case for anything and anywhere in the sense of if you don't know what's going to come, right? You don't know what plans God has at the end. What you know are the parameters He's given us of law and gospel. We've got what right and wrong is in the Ten Commandments, and we've got the history of the salvation of the world and the man Jesus, and we've got His new covenant. And church is where that covenant is. That covenant has marks and signs. You can always know where it is. And our dream and our duty as Christians is not just to find it. And once we find it, that's good. It is our duty to find it and to be near it. But then our duty is also to put it in as many places as possible. I think reckoning with that ecclesiology, that knowledge of the church as given in the Bible, is a major task for the next generation of Christians in the United States, because we're going to be watching all these things that call themselves church becoming what amount to be pagan temples. They may not look like temples, but they're going to be pagan worship services. They're the Gnostic knowledge cults of old. Only the knowledge now is how to have a better marriage and how to balance your budget. And if we can't tell the difference and then care, we're just going to go with them. And I think we can trust the gospel in this. The Spirit isn't going to let us, so far as we're really Christians. He's going to convict us of this, and He's the one who's going to build His church. So then listen to that, hear that, say, yeah, amen, let's do it, right? Let's receive what He said, and let's put it into practice as well, where it is given for us to do.
Pastor Jonathan Fisk is associate pastor of Bethany Lutheran Church in Naperville, Illinois. He's host of the video blog Worldview Everlasting. And he's author of the book, Broken, 7 Christian Rules That Every Christian Ought to Break As Often As Possible. You find a link to it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand and a link to Worldview Everlasting as well. Jonathan, it's always a pleasure, and keep up the good work. Thanks for being our guest.
I appreciate it, Todd. Likewise.
When we come back, we're going to spend some time talking about something you heard Pastor Fisk mention a few minutes ago. They are actually building temples to the Norse gods in Iceland. The story about 1,000-year-old religion finding a revival of sorts in Iceland, back to the old gods of Thorin, Odin, and Frigg. I don't even know who Frigg is, but Thorin, Odin sound to me like the stuff of, I don't know, fantasy fiction, not in Iceland. It's religious. It's very light religion. It's very culturally based religion, but it's the old paganism, brand new. We'll talk about that with Lars Walker right after this.
There are nearly 20 million college students in the United States. 40% will stop going to church during college. 50% will never return. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is seeking to meet this challenge through LCMSU. Why? Because 100% of college students matter to God and to His church. College is tough. You need Jesus. We'll help. LCMSU. Check us out at lcms.org/lcmsu.
Bethany Lutheran College is pleased to sponsor Issues Etc. and Lutheran Public Radio. Bethany Lutheran College is located in the picturesque river town of Mankato, Minnesota, and is committed to making Christian higher education affordable for all with generous financial aid packages available. At Bethany, you'll find stimulating academic programs, a friendly atmosphere, and opportunities to grow both in intellect and in your faith, all within the framework of a supportive Christian environment. For more information, visit us on the web at blc.edu.
Lord God, Thou hast made me a pastor and teacher in the church. Pastors know they aren't perfect, but they are to be cherished and supported. Learn more at acelc.net and register for our next conference on the unbiblical removal of pastors from the office of the ministry, February 10th through 12th in Kansas City, Missouri. Pastors aren't perfect, but they are a gift from God. Learn how you can support them at acelc.net.
I will certainly bring it all to destruction.
Good Shepherd Lutheran Church in Collinsville, Illinois is happy to support the Christ-centered, cross-focused ministry of Issues Etc. Join us for worship, Bible classes, youth ministry, and other opportunities to grow in Christ. We have a Christian day school for children in preschool to 8th grade. We are located at 1300 Beltline Road. Call us at 618-344-3151 or visit www.goodshepherdcollinsville.org.
Talk radio for recovering evangelicals. You're listening to Issues Etc.
I like to think of the deaconess vocation as driven by two things, the love of Christ and the needs of our neighbor.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. James Buescher, Director of Deaconess Studies at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, on the vocation of deaconess.
First, the deaconess is moved by the love of Christ, who came not to be served, but to serve. Yet I think we can also see the profound needs around us, broken families, loneliness, despair. Deaconesses help the church to become a true family that manifests the love of Christ in our love for one another, and especially for those in need.
For more information on the Deaconess Studies program at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, visit ctsfw.edu or call Concordia Theological Seminary at 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155. We're joined now by listener Rocky. Rocky, tell us about the tax benefits of donating stocks to Issues Etc.
What we discovered in talking with our tax people and our stock advisors is that it would be beneficial for us to be giving our charitable donations by this means, by giving stocks, which meant that we could give a stock and essentially say if you gave a $100 stock, it's straight money to whatever charitable organization you want to give, as opposed to cashing it out, we'd only be able to give whatever portion is left over after the tax consequences.
How would you advise our listeners if they're interested in donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds?
They need to go and talk to their stockbroker or their tax person, and I think they'll find out it makes a heck of a lot of economic sense. And you're much better steward with your money, because what you're ending up doing is stretching the dollars that you're able to give donation-wise, and you're able to give a whole lot more directly to those people that you want to support. And you're able to preserve much more for yourself using the laws that have been provided for it.
Rocky, is there anything that we left out that you want to tell our listeners?
Well, the only thing that you've missed is that people really need to support Issues Etc. This is a terrific way to do it in a very economical way. It's a way to do it and be good stewards of the resources that God has blessed people with. And I would encourage everyone to support Issues Etc. in every possible way that they can. And if this is available to them, I'd encourage them to look into it, because it not only will help them, but it'll help Issues Etc. also.
To find out how to reduce your tax burden and support this worldwide outreach by donating stocks, bonds, or mutual funds, talk to your stockbroker or tax advisor, and then call Craig here at Lutheran Public Radio, 618-223-8385.